on faith. Okay. And the definition section, I'll be back and read them all. Faith. Faith is trust in an authority. A long time ago, somebody told me that the more you examine the truth, the truer it becomes. And the more you examine a lie, the more false it becomes. And somewhere in there I noticed, and we're going to get to it here in a minute, is where this idea that faith, before 400 years, people have been saying, well, faith is just belief. It's a leap in the dark. And that's exactly the opposite. And which is what, if you got enemies, they want you to believe the opposite of what's true, because it's the truth that sets us free, not our opinion of the truth. And ultimately, faith, real faith, is trust in an authority. None of us believes stuff that we didn't get from somewhere else. Kids are built by God to be very trusting. They believe whatever you tell them. Mm-hmm. And it's only through having that trust violated over and over and over again that we grow up to become cynical adults. Can't believe anybody saying anything. Prove it. So, by trusting in our ultimate authority is God Himself. And even coming to Christ as a new Christian, we don't have that trust. Is not automatic. It grows. Mm-hmm. The more we experience God and His way and His person and doing things, we come to trust Him more and more. It brings us through hard stuff. And we survive it. That's Romans 5. But, what's the best way to get patience? Tribulation. So, faith is trust in an authority, and there's facets to it also. It's not exclusively that, but it is mostly trust in authority. And we're going to see an example of that here in a minute. It is belief that you put into action. Sir James said, faith without works is dead. We have to do something with it. You can't believe what you don't know. There is an element of belief to faith, is essentially trust. And reason and knowledge, and I'm just going to read this like it is so I get it right. Reason and knowledge are the servants of faith. Faith starts in knowledge. It's not a leap in the dark. Starts in knowledge and is perfected in experience. It is not a leap of faith. It is an application of trust and understanding. This is probably the heart of it. It's not a leap. It is an application of trust and understanding. When he says, turn left, if we trust him, we'll turn left. Everybody believes things that are unverifiable by natural sciences. Presuppositions are completely unverifiable, no matter who they are, whose presuppositions they are. They are unverifiable by natural science. Faith allows us to touch the future. God says, get ready, you're going to Africa. So we start preparing. God told Noah, build a boat. Flood's coming. He started building. That's the faith, the being put into action part of it. There's often something we have to do if God wants something from us. Or a teacher, you got to do your homework. Teachers, I mean, authority figures, there's a reason that authority figures are under severe attack today. And that started back in the 60s. Which I always wonder where that hippie rebellion came from, and as I looked, it came from the philosophers in the philosophy departments of the 50s. They were taught almost exclusively, the philosophy departments were leftist, Marxist, atheistic, evolutionary. And if all that's true, then these people, Jean-Paul Sartre telling us that you got to figure out for yourself, by yourself, who you really are. That's why we have 129 gender references, because people figuring out who they really are, instead of who the ultimate authority said we are. So, in the 50s, these started teaching, and what came out of that was consistent with their teaching. Authorities are just people trying to get power over you. If you let somebody else, including your parents, tell you what to believe or who you are, what you're part of, which in the history of humanity was normal. That's the son of a shoemaker, son of a cobbler, son of whoever. Maybe that's the same thing. Anyway, you don't let anybody tell you what to do. By the way, the word iniquity in the Bible means my way.
Means what?
My way.
My way.
Technically, it's the word lawless. But in Psalm, or Isaiah 53, all we like sheep have turned aside. We have all turned to our own way. And the Father laid on the Son the iniquity of us all. My way. Self-centered. Self is like, has exploded. Because if it's up to you to figure out yourself, who you really are, then it is, it's like the ultimate self-centered. Which is also what Rene Descartes launched into philosophy in his I Think, Therefore I Am, is that the self, the mind becomes the ultimate self-centered point of reference in the universe. And that's okay as long as you don't stay there. And I've kind of learned that it is the philosophers who have sown the stuff into the culture. It starts in the philosophy departments. They teach it to the students who grow up, get married, get jobs, become HR personnel, and politicians who then ultimately translate all of that into law. That everybody else. All law is somebody's moral philosophy being imposed on everybody else. So it matters who these people are, who the lawmakers are. Because they're going to impose their moral philosophy on everybody, embodied in law with the police force to back them up. And that creates all kinds of problems. Because people recognize law and justice now, they don't travel together. Mm-hmm. They got a divorce. Yeah. And so it creates resentment. And probably when the righteous rule, the people rejoice, but when the wicked rule, the people mourn. Hey, you can just look into a culture. Are the people mourning or are they rejoicing? It tells you who's in charge and what they're doing and why, at least in our country, we can replace them. So, faith allows us to touch the future through avenues of trust, induction, uniformity of nature, and experimentation. Greg Bonson once asked, what justifies your proceeding on the expectation that the future will be like the past? And that's faith. We have faith that when I have faith when I squeeze my tube of toothpaste, toothpaste is going to come out. It's not going to be hair cream. That's the uniformity of nature. Nature behaves uniformly. That's a huge problem in atheistic philosophy. Why should it? Why should gravity be the same tomorrow? This is why science developed in the Christian worldview instead of the Hindu worldview, which says reality is all an illusion. Everything we live is an illusion. Gravity could be different tomorrow, so we don't. So they developed toys, like there's a little steam engine toy from 2,000 years ago that a Greek made. But it never went anywhere. They never thought about scaling it up and running the machine with it. That happened in the church, starting about 1200, 1300, 1400. And then it really blossomed under the Protestant Reformation. So I have a little discussion on uniformity of nature. Is the assumption that nature behaves in a uniform manner across space and time. This is assumed since we have no experience beyond our own space and time. It allows us to take our experience and apply them into another place. That we can take things we learned. We learned something about carpets, and we take that and apply it, the principles, to wallpaper. We have completely different things, but there's things there that we can use in other areas of life. So, this is necessary for science and intimately related to induction. And we use induction all the time, also. Induction is a principle that allows us to start from general things, even past experience, and make specific conclusions or applications. It allows us to make predictions, a future outcome, based on past experience or even incomplete knowledge. Induction by faith helps us to bridge the knowledge gap. Induction works hand in hand with uniformity of nature to make science possible. And David Hume, in his Problem of Induction, demonstrates monistic, and from last time, monism, all of reality is one thing, and to the materialist, all of reality is matter, chemistry and physics. That's all that exists. Nature's box. Materialism offers no foundation for induction, and worse, him and later philosophers said that it is not possible that the human mind can know a future. That's why in the Bible, these prophets cannot possibly be predicting the future, because nobody can know the future. There is no God, and these prophets in the Bible are saying something's going to happen in the future, and they're just making stuff. This is what happens when, and I'll probably go into it more, but allowing Muslims, atheists, others to impose their worldview. Oh, the Bible's all wrong. Well, why is it wrong? Because Jesus walked on water and rose from the dead. Miracles are impossible. There's no supernatural. So the Bible is all obviously a flawed book that nobody should read because it's filled with mythology and inventions. This is where we need to disconnect their worldviews. So they're trying to impose a naturalistic worldview on a supernatural book like the Bible. It breaks down the Bible. If we let it. So we have to say, no. Your worldview is wrong. The biblical worldview is the correct one. And here's why. It's the here's why part of it. So, here's some examples I used. I have studied swans in Wyoming for 2 years and concluded that all swans in Wyoming are white. So all that has to happen is somebody has to produce a black swan in Wyoming, and my conclusion is proved wrong. Mm-hmm. But I've made a conclusion based on my limited study. And only God has comprehensive knowledge, and so the things He can say are comprehensive and absolute. By the way, apart from God, there are no absolutes. So when you hear somebody say, there's no absolute truth, you know exactly what they're talking about. And it would help to probably confirm, so you're an atheist, right? Because the only absolutes that can exist come from God. Large copper deposits are discovered on the moon. Since we have no experience with lunar copper, what makes us think that lunar copper will conduct electricity like terrestrial copper? We assume that they're both copper. We assume they would, but we have no experience. So we cannot say with certainty, at least in this atheistic view of reality, we cannot say with certainty that lunar copper will behave the same as the copper we find here on Earth. This is where things are getting, that's why they're fragmenting so badly, the chaos and disorder is growing. Because these things are coming to fruit. I call it the stage 4 mental cancer of postmodernism. That it's breaking down everything. But it's really becoming consistent. The materialistic worldview is chaos. Mm-hmm. Its origin story is chaos. Stuff came about for no reason. It ran, chance random processes. So any mention of order, particularly law and order, is by definition a man-made invention. So why are we going to live that way? Why are we going to live under somebody else's imposed rules, like law and order? And it's where you might hear the word post-structural. That structure was brought about by the Enlightenment and the science that came behind it that described the universe. And I saw an advertisement from a class where you can take class and learn to walk through walls. It's a Hindu-based supernatural. But for $5,000, they'll teach you how to walk through walls. And I admit it's possible. My experience with the supernatural and before I got saved was there's a whole lot of things that are possible. So, what makes us think we can mix hydrogen and oxygen and get water? Not salt. What makes us think that we can squeeze toothpaste and toothpaste? Because these are future events, and to be a consistent materialist, we can't know that. We can't know that these things are going to happen. But no, people can't live that way. It is not possible to live that way. So we live in materialists live mostly inconsistent with their worldview, because according to the worldview, that can't be known. Religion. The next one is the day-to-day exercise or living expression of faith. In the same way, every human being lives by faith. The religion that they live, regardless of what they profess, is how that faith is expressed. Those root beliefs are lived out day-to-day. You can't avoid it. It's unavoidable. And it affects your reality, what you think is real, how you know what you know, and what you think is important and valuable. It's humorous. There's an organization out there called the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And what they mean is, especially, most of this is Christianity centered. The public enemy number one in this modern world are male white Christians, because those are the ones that are primarily responsible for the structure and order that kind of brought us to where we are. And the ultimate target of the patriarchal society is Father God, and they hate him. So the idea that somebody could be religion free, it's no, we want to cancel out everybody else's religion and just impose ours. Atheism is a theological statement. Atheism is a belief about God. Mm-hmm. And there's no escaping. But we have to point that out. In the science, there's all kinds of mysteries. That's on the Philosophy of the Mind page. And towards the bottom, that there's all these mysteries in science. And I don't know what to do with them. So they write these IOUs by faith. Yes, in Stardate 2489, we're going to come up with a new law that says sometimes people can rise from the dead. And then we'll find out how to use that law, and we'll make everybody rise from the dead. So, people gather together in faith communities, organizations, American Atheist Association, Presbyterian Church, there's all these organizations, and they have Marxism. Karl Marx introduced the world to a new religion and has denominations. Communism is one of the Marxist denominations. Socialism is another. And there's a neo-Marxism, which is another. And there is the group that came out of the Frankfurt School, critical theory, is another. And there's these denominations. So, changing one's religion means you've changed your faith, your foundational faith commitments. And in the same way, and I use the example of Saul of Tarsus, when he was a prominent Jewish leader. But when he became a Christian, those people who looked up to him now were hunting him down to kill him. And so changing your faith community will often change associations, and sometimes it's traumatic. And next page is the theology. Everyone has an outline about their religion. Theology is just the justification outline and or theory of one's religion. Philosophy, who we are, how do we fit in, and why. It tries to answer the big question, and it serves religion. All religions have an attendant philosophy. Everybody does philosophy. Think about how we fit into the group, or lots of stuff. Why am I here? Kind of things. But they're answered through these steps: faith, religion, theology, philosophy. Used to be that called that the theology was the queen of the sciences, and philosophy is her attendant. Politics. So this is one that you say, "Oh, everything's politics." No, everything is religion. Politics is an expression of religion. The separation of church and state, as developed by the atheistic, leftist, Marxist crowd, the separation of church and state. Until really modern times, only Christians had churches. It was a direct attack to keep the Christianity out of government. They know is America was founded as a Christian nation. That's its big sin. If you're an atheist, it is the big sin. It was the Declaration of Independence, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. The Enlightenment declared war on America on July 4, 1776. A day that will live in infamy. And then when they said one nation under God, oh, that was horrible. Now they put it on our money, and God we trust, oh, that's horrible. It's been big movements to have all that stuff eliminated. because it's politics. The application of theology onto the social order and government. The largest position of atheism is communism, or one of its denominations. A state is the ultimate organized religion. Allah is someone's moral philosophy derived from their worldview being imposed on everyone else. Government is inherently forceful. As George Washington said, it's a fire. It has to be contained in the fireplace. If it gets loose, it's going to burn the house down. They recognize that's why they had small government was part of the initial development. And all the anti-federalists say it's not going to stay small.
And is it because the population is just growing?
It has nothing to do with population. It has to do with control.
Mm-hmm.
It's not population.
But the more population, the more chaotic and more problematic managing.
Every one of those principles laid out in the Constitution can manage a population, can manage the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the application and the willingness, because it's radically different. And it can manage, but, and that's, they see, well, you know, times have changed, the populations are different, we need a different constitution to manage in a modern world, and humanity has not changed. The ideas have become more pervasive and corrupt, but really none of the ideas. And control, you don't need a philosophy to want to control the world, but when you have one, that it about guarantees that. So let's go to, I've got a Bible. Where did I put it? Matthew. Where'd you go? It's day 2. Can I give them all away? I actually have day 2 starting out with what is faith. And so I want to read. It's the story of the centurion.
Matthew 8:5-13. Okay. Day 2, great faith. Matthew 8:5-13.
Okay. Somebody. If somebody wants to read it, I'll read it.
Or do you want me to read it amplified?
How about up on the screen?
Okay.
I'm going to do amplified.
So when Jesus entered Capernaum, the centurion came to him, pleading with him, saying, "Lord, my servant is lying home, paralyzed, dreadfully tormented." Jesus said, "I will come and heal him." The centurion answers, and, "Lord, I am not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak the word, and my servant will be healed. For I," this is key, verse 9 is key, "for I also am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes, to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to those who followed, "Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel." There's a direct connection. Mm-hmm. And Jesus called it great faith. There's a direct connection between Jesus' words and his soldiers. You tell it, all you have to do is say it. "For I also am a man under authority, And this is where it gets into that faith is trust in an authority. Jesus, all you have to do is say it, and your soldiers will go to work and take care of my servant.